We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrandt, that fine gentleman over there in the heart of the Midwest. The one, the only, the incomparable, Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you today?
Not bad, not bad. It's still a nice time in the Midwest. The leaves have changed colors, a lot of yellows and reds and oranges. It's brisk, but it's an unseasonably warm 48 at some point this afternoon. Try to play some tennis tonight. You got to take advantage of the tropical situations that come upon us because
sure.
It's week 12. It's deep into the season. We have a lot of games and matchups and storylines and coaches because there's news everywhere to talk about. But I am grateful that I can describe my surroundings as brisk and autumnal, Ty.
That is correct. It is equally as warm over here. Things heating up as we get into week 12. See what I did there?
Total pro. Total pro.
SolidGiveaway.com is where you can go and follow a few easy steps if you want to compete or at least throw your hat in the ring. There's not really much of a competition. For a signed RG3 mini helmet, go on out there and do it now. That contest runs through December the 8th. Go on out to SolidSaturday.com on Saturday morning. That's where we do our 11 a.m. live stream, walk you through, give you a blueprint for the week 12 that is ahead. SolidVerbal.com, of course, is our home base. That is where you can find the three articles that we post on a weekly basis from Travis, Connor, and from Bradley. And of course, you can find all of our old episodes there. And last but certainly not least, Verballers.com. Verballers.com is our esteemed Patreon community. You can become a certified or premium Verballer, get access to this show, all of our shows a little bit early. You also can pipe on into our Discord server and kibitz with
kibitz
the Solid Verbal community at large.
Kibitz.
Dan.
Yeah.
And 408 Verbal One, while we're at it, 408 Verbal One is the reverb line. We would encourage you all to give us a call this Saturday as you are watching, imbibing all things college football. Let us know what is on your mind, and we will cut up those messages and play them back as something we call the reverbs every Sunday morning / Monday for the general public, Sunday for the Verballer community on Patreon, as part of a little segment we like to call the reverbs, Dan. I think I've got it all down at the top.
Yes.
How are you feeling about this coming Saturday?
I feel wonderful about it. I feel better about this coming week 12, so Saturday and beyond, than I felt about week 11. Week 11, in terms of picking games and thinking about what is going to affect winning, I had a more difficult time, I think, with week 11 than week 12. It's the sort of breakthrough moment. Maybe I was plateauing intellectually right around week 11.
Sure.
But now with week 12, there were enough results from week 11 and enough changes to at least my perceptions of teams. I thought week 11 was a pretty decent sized breaking point in both directions in the sport. I feel good. I feel wonderful. And I feel especially good because one of the headliners this week is Michigan State, Ohio State, correct?
That is correct.
Michigan State, a borderline playoff team, heads to Columbus a week after. I know we're going to get into a preview in earnest here. But because of this specific matchup, and then you look at the implications of matchups across the country, there's potential for a number of teams who had hopes of rising to a certain level, ascending to a certain status within the sport, getting their hopes dashed.
Settle.
No. Hold on. I'm looking for the word divorces. It's irrevocable differences.
Irrevocable differences.
So we are looking at a situation in a way that, like, if Michigan State loses to Ohio State, especially in a pronounced way, like, playoff hopes are done, right?
Yeah.
But then you're talking about bowl hopes are done for other teams. You're talking about New Year's Six hopes are done. Like, this is that final stretch. And because of Michigan State, Ohio State, and the visual of Urban Meyer having that specific hope dropped from his brain all those years ago in the Big
Ten
championship game.
Losing to Michigan State, right?
Losing to Michigan State as the Ohio State head coach. I'm proposing it is Sad Slice Saturday. P-I-C-C-A. Yeah.
Sad Slice Saturday. Also, we're going to talk momentarily about some coaches being let go, eating their own sad slices on this week. Welcome to Sad Slice Saturday, Dan. I also feel very confident. I didn't feel good about week 10 or week 11.
Look at you.
I feel awesome about week 12 and how I think things are going to break down. Before we go there, though...
Yes, we do.
Both Jimmy Lake and Justin Fuente.
What am I going to do without my Mac Brown impression of Justin Fuente's name?
He'll catch on somewhere, isn't it?
I know, that's true.
Both Jimmy Lake and Justin Fuente have been dismissed for different reasons, right? Jimmy Lake didn't seem like he had many allies within the administration out there at Washington. There was also some sort of physical incident with a player. Most recently with the Oregon game, maybe there was one prior, who knows. And the on-field product, at least in terms of the offense and certainly rushing defense, was not there for Jimmy Lake. So he is kaput at Washington. The Fuente news broke shortly before we hit record, very early this morning on Tuesday. This, again, was not all that unexpected. It seemed more a matter of when, not if. So, one of the interesting factoids that may only interest me was that if they had waited until December 15th to dismiss Justin Fuente, they would only have owed somewhere in the vicinity of $7.5 million. Virginia Tech decided, nah, needs to be now. And by virtue of doing that now, they paid out $10 million instead of the $7.5 million. So, Fuente, Jimmy Lake, both eating their own sad slice today. Where are you at with regard to these coaching vacancies? I don't know if any of them were all that unexpected, but what are some of the names that you've seen that are of interest to you with where they go next?
You asked me like 9 questions in that question.
You're a smart
guy. Here's my
guy.
Social security
I
number.
Know what you got.
Here are my turn on. Yeah, okay. Two fascinating jobs. Both have similar expectations to be flirtatious with double-digit wins based on somewhat recent and somewhat not so recent histories, different coasts, different conferences, different types of environments, right? Blacksburg is pretty removed from the bigger cities. You know, it's not that far from, I guess, Richmond, I believe, Richmond, Roanoke. Somebody will correct me. It's fine. I'm just throwing out cities I know in Virginia. And of course, the University of Washington, smack in the heart of Seattle, Washington, in the Pacific Northwest. Jimmy Lake not getting a full 2 years taking over for Chris Peterson was a little surprising. I figured he was going to get another year. Now, I saw some sourcing that recruiting had fallen to such an extent that they could not afford to let him remain in charge of the Huskies any longer. The recruiting did fall off a cliff after Chris Peterson left. It was in a really nice place, no, competing for the crown in the Pac-12, turning in, you know, top 12, 15 classes, which is quite impressive. And the same can be said at Virginia Tech, where there, I would argue, in a better region of the country in terms of recruiting. They had gone into North Carolina some, into the Newport News and the Virginia Beach area successfully, and that sort of fell off. I believe it's, gosh, what's the name of the Andy Bitter? Is that who's at the Athletic, is the Virginia Tech, yep, beat writer?
Right.
He wrote a piece about it because that's what's required now. Anytime a coach get fired, an Athletic writer already has the obit ready to roll,
sure,
on what went wrong, as we saw with, I think, Brody Miller and LSU a couple weeks ago. But I was surprised. I really was surprised. 2 years, or not even 2 years, is a short amount of time. And whether it's the recruiting, whether it's the, you know, talking trash ahead of the Oregon game and losing to Oregon, whether it's the altercation that happened on the sideline, whatever it is, the Washington football program seems broken. The offense seemed broken. The coordinator hire wasn't good. Up front on defense, they took a huge step back. And it didn't seem like there were a number of ways in which it was clearly going to turn around in the next, yeah, year or two. So I understand why that change was made. I kind of liked Jimmy Lake's personality. I liked that he was loud, and I thought it was good for the Pac-12 that he's a talker. I loved his smack talk with the Apple Cup all those times, beating Mike Leach, his defense doing a great job there. Disappointed he couldn't get it worked out on the recruiting trail and offensively, because Washington is one of the programs on the West Coast, and if they're starting over again, it's not good for the Pac-12. It's not good that they're starting at square one in terms of a football team, a recruiting operation, culture, everything. Virginia Tech is a little more fascinating to me because I think it can be turned around a little bit more quickly. Now, Fuente screwed up quarterback, right? Hendon Hooker was an answer. Jerrod Evans was really promising early. He leaves after, in a weird way, after a year when they had a good year. You know, the Bud Foster transition was a little wonky. I'm positive there are better candidates in that area that want to coach at Virginia Tech than there are at Washington. But I'm not as surprised by the Fuente thing, because if you read the piece, it was turmoil in recruiting, turmoil with coach hires, turmoil with quarterback, like Hendon Hooker is cold against Clemson and transfers. And then, like, if you're going to connect it to the West Coast, like bringing in Braxton Burmeister was kind of a surprise to any Oregon fan who had watched Burmeister play for the Ducks. We're like, look, there's like a scrappiness and a competitiveness to him, but you figured he was more of like a Fresno or Sam Houston State or James Madison type answer. So I don't know. I think Fuente will land on his feet. I think Virginia Tech is going to have somewhat tough sledding because there are so many Power Five openings at interesting places. But I still think Whit Babcock has a good enough reputation that a number of, he's the AD for the Hokies, that a number of quality candidates will want to coach for him.
Yeah.
As for those candidates, you ask me.
Yeah,
I know I'm long-winded here, but what names immediately jump out to you, sourced or otherwise?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's very early. This news went public 7:45 a.m. Eastern time,
yeah,
Tuesday morning. Saw Jamie Chadwell's name, saw Billy Napier's name. Those are interesting guys. Saw,
sure,
both Brent Venables as well as Tony Elliott. Who's to say if any of these guys are interested in that position, but I think you're right. Virginia Tech's very interesting in that it's a talent-rich area, provided they continue committing to the football program from a financial standpoint. Obviously, the atmosphere on game day is virtually second to none, Lane Stadium, right? Incredible,
right,
home field environment.
Mm-hmm.
And you could imagine very easily a coach at a smaller school or a coach with just kind of a coordinator role right now being interested in stepping into that. And,
yep,
potentially having a springboard for success because it is a talent-rich area.
Yeah.
I don't know. Jamie Chadwell is, I think, maybe the most fascinating name to me, not just with regard to the Virginia Tech opening, but perhaps all of college football. I'm just in love with the system that he runs, how it is,
yeah,
all the systems at once. And, you know, maybe if you don't have Grayson McCall, as he doesn't now, things go a little bit differently. But nonetheless, what he's done at Coastal in a very short period of time has been nothing short of marvelous. So he's a name that I'm interested in. On the Washington side, Washington's a good job, a really good job on the West Coast. Perhaps
it's tricky, but it's good.
Yeah, it's tricky, and perhaps there is some reclamation work that needs to go down. But already there's been a ton of speculation. I saw Bruce Feldman, our friend, posted something in The Athletic about some of the potentials for that role. I really like Kalen DeBoer.
Sure.
You know, maybe not a household name quite yet, but has slowly risen through the ranks, did a great job at Indiana before jumping over to Fresno, and now, of course, has his hat in the ring potentially for some bigger openings. That's a name that I think is probably the least sexy of all the names that are out there, but one that I think will do very well at some point when he does move on to a bigger and better job.
Yeah. No, the Washington job is interesting, right? It's in a major American city, and typically that is not where huge programs thrive, because Washington has an elephant in their division in Oregon right now. The recruiting and the winning, it makes it more difficult. Virginia Tech doesn't. North Carolina has improved and recruits better than they have.
Yeah.
But Virginia Tech's path to winning the Coastal is not fraught with speed bumps. Like, Pitt is likely going to win it this year. A good but not great Pitt team. There's nobody gearing up for 9 straight Coastals.
No.
As we look at it. Whereas the North is a little trickier. Now, Washington and Wazoo are looking at jobs. I think Kalen DeBoer is interesting. There's a little bit of Lance Leipold to me, to Kalen DeBoer, in that he has so much experience winning as a head coach on a lower level. He's from the Upper Plains area. I think one of the Dakotas, somewhere along
South
there.
South Dakota. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But yeah, the West Coast has some interesting, or the West Coast footprint, right? You have Kalani Sitake, now BYU is moving to the Big 12, but the Washington job is bigger than the BYU job. To me, perhaps I'm wrong. Brent Brennan, with the recent success that he's at San Jose State, Jay Norvell at Nevada, these are not terribly easy places to win.
No.
So, I mean, BYU more so, but Kalen DeBoer is one that really jumps out to me. I know Justin Wilcox's name has come up because Cal can be a difficult place to win, as we've seen. But and obviously he has experience coaching there. I would imagine Washington, with what went wrong for Jimmy Lake, specifically a first-time head coach, is going to look at somebody who is not just a coordinator.
Yeah,
they want somebody who's a current head coach, a recent head coach,
experience.
somebody with that experience to get that program right organizationally, and with his hires and with his recruiting department and with his offseason and with his strength and conditioning hire, whatever.
Yeah.
That's the direction I imagine Washington is going to go in specifically.
Yeah, and guess what? There are going to be more openings.
Yep.
There are going to be more openings. We've seen a slow and steady build as the season's gone on. I don't know if teams were waiting through the 2020 pandemic because it was an odd year to see how 2021 would pan out. But now the chickens are starting to come home to roost, man. And it's not the last. We know we're going to see more of these over the course of the next few weeks and months. Coaches maybe not just getting relieved of duties, but choosing to work elsewhere. We'll be right here as best we can to try and cover it. But as these things go, they do develop rather quickly. It doesn't always lend itself well to on-demand audio.
Everybody's getting paid. You're getting paid for being fired. You're getting paid because there's interest in you and your school gives you a raise. You're getting paid if you're an agent. Everybody's getting cash in this coach hire racket. But yeah, I mean, look at the jobs across the country that are still occupied, whether it's Florida, Miami, Arizona State. Like, there are going to be more dominoes that fall, especially with the early signing period, which is something you mentioned. Why does Virginia Tech make that $2.5 million decision to go from a buyout of 10 million from 7.5 million? They want to get a coach in for a couple of weeks of visits and recruiting before that early signing period, either to keep a class, add to a class, change the class, increase what. That's the reason why. Anytime you have to ask why in college football, we've talked about this before. Recruiting, 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 recruiting. That's it.
With all that being said, Dan, shall we move on?
Let's.
To week 12.
Dan, time, help. I need picks of the week.
Week 12. Can you believe it? Can you believe it?
Not fully.
Week 12. The season has gone by very quickly.
You want to
quickly.
Ask our wives if they can believe it? Yeah. It's been 12 full weeks of not having full weekends.
It has felt like a long death march for our wives, for sure.
Yep.
But week 12, here we are. We've got week 13, rivalry week next week that we will obviously go into great detail discussing. But for now, look, if you're looking at it this week, if you're looking for a window, You know it's a good week. We're going to talk through why it's a good week. You've got games, good games, all throughout the course of the day. I think the meaty spot, if you need to go out, be amongst the people, do stuff with the kids, grill food, whatever it is, being away from the TV, listening to our friend Stevie Speedrun on the College Football Blitz, I would suggest something in the afternoon block. If it were
okay.
There is a grouping of games. There's Alabama-Arkansas. There is SMU-Cincy, which I am fascinated by, and I'm going to lock up when we get there.
Mm-hmm.
There is also the Notre Dame-Georgia Tech game, Nebraska-Wisconsin, Michigan-Maryland, UAB-UTSA, UCLA-USC, Louisiana-Liberty. Even Baylor, K-State, as you get a little bit later on.
You're kind of selling me on this. I kind of like this window all of a sudden.
It's a good window, but it's not as good as the other two blocks, being the earlier slate and the later slate. So go out, be amongst the people in the afternoon, late afternoon, dinner time. Make sure you're home in time for like 7 p.m. Eastern time. Catch the end of that Baylor game and catch the start of your Oregon Ducks on the road against Utah.
I think I like the depth of the afternoon more than the morning or the nooners, the noon games, the early window. You have Michigan State, Ohio State, right?
That is
and
early.
That's early. And then Iowa State, Oklahoma, Wake Forest, Clemson, Florida State, Boston College.
Good games. Those are good games.
Are they?
Have you watched any of those teams recently?
Like, have you watched Oklahoma football and Iowa State football recently? Have you watched Michigan State football recently? Like, Clemson's right. offense? You're sticking around to watch? Okay.
That's a meaningful game to Wake Forest. Wake Forest is
It's a meaningful game for both teams.
In a long time. So, all right.
Clemson could finish. Have they lost three times, Clemson?
They have lost three times.
They could finish 9-3 and win 10 games with a bowl after all of this nightmare of a season. It's pretty wild. All right.
Let's start at high noon on ABC. Let's start with Michigan State on the road at Ohio State. Ohio State favored by 19. It's jumped around a fair amount. I saw it at 20 and a half. I've seen it down at 18. Let's go in the middle and say 19. The Buckeyes last week basically told everyone to go to hell. That's what they did. They destroyed Purdue. These last 2 weeks, though, for the Buckeyes is where the rubber meets the road. Michigan State, Dan, just like their country, they're young, they're scrappy, they're hungry. They're not just going to throw away their shot here to knock off a perennial favorite in the Big Ten East. So I expect Mel Tucker will have them ready to play. I expect that
Like their country? Are you calling America young and scrappy?
You missed the Hamilton reference, but it's okay, Dan.
I haven't seen Hamilton. Sorry. I'm not cosmopolitan.
It's on Disney Plus. Not a sponsor. Could be.
That's true. Could be. Yeah. Sorry.
I think Mel Tucker is going to have them ready to play. I think Mel Tucker is going to have them ready, willing, and able to score on Ohio State.
Okay.
My issue is I don't think they can keep pace.
Right.
Because the Buckeyes will most certainly be able to score on them, especially through the air. You know, sort of lost in this glow of the great season that Michigan State's had, and has been a great season, and has been a great story. I'm rooting for them here, not because I don't have anything against Ohio State, but I'm rooting for the underdog because that's what I do. Lost in all of that glow of the enchanted season that's been is the fact that Michigan State's defense isn't all that great.
There are issues.
The pass defense is a big-time liability, and that just does not bode well for them here in this matchup. So, can they keep pace? No. Can they win? No, I don't think so. Not with the game being in the horseshoe.
Okay.
But can they cover?
Another question.
I think they can cover. I don't know if it's of the backdoor variety or what. But 19 is an awful lot of points in a game that I know Mel Tucker is going to have his troop amped and ready to play.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan State is also covering 78% of the time this season. Vegas has never really had a great feel for this Spartans team. I think it's something like 41-24, maybe even 41-31. I think a lot of points. I think Ohio State is able to keep them at arm's length for a good chunk of this game. I would not want to go favorite here. Even though I have a ton of respect for Ohio State, and I do think they're going to be able to throw all over the Spartans.
Yeah.
I don't have a great feel for 19. So give me Ohio State to win. Something like 41-24, 41-31. and Michigan State to cover.
I disagree. I think Ohio State covers this. I'm going to put on my cap as the engineer of the Underthink Express, okay?
Okay.
Aiden O'Connell threw for a bajillion yards against Michigan State 2 weeks ago. Not a long time ago. Last week, Purdue got murdered by Ohio State. What do we believe C.J. Stroud and those receivers, with those running back options? I know Travion Henderson is beat up. I'm not sure of his status at the time of recording. What do we think that offense is going to do to Michigan State if Aiden O'Connell was able to throw like he was able to throw against Michigan State? The other thing that concerns me is Michigan State in the second half, and I fully agree with the way you worded it, keeping up. Michigan State in the second half, forget the Nebraska game. Here's what happened in the second half against Purdue 2 weeks ago, Michigan State, okay? They tie it up. Michigan State ties it up. They score pretty quickly once they get the ball. They take advantage of a fumble. It's 21-all. And then Purdue scores. All right, we got a bit of a shootout. Then, 3-and-out. Hey, Purdue scores again. 3-and-out. Hey, Purdue scores again. Interception. Right? There is something about Michigan State where they have a finite amount of firepower. And the Michigan State season has been awesome. It's been an awesome story. Yeah. And I hate that we're putting it into the context of the playoff, because Michigan State is better than having the success that they've had put into that context. I think Ohio State is going to exploit, and I think Michigan State has that upper end limit of like 24 points against an Ohio State defense that has been improving. I don't like their second half fades. I have Ohio State winning this game 48-21.
Okay, so we're not that far off.
We're not that far off, but I have them covering.
You have them covering. Okay. Yeah. Is this going to be one of those weeks where you feel good about your picks, I feel really good about my picks, and somehow we disagree on all of them?
Yeah, maybe.
I think it could be happening.
And I'll shoot you some texts and some Slack messages as it's happening, like, oh, looks like you're clones. Not getting it done against Texas Tech's third string quarterback.
You know I'm picking the clones, don't you? You already know
that. Of course
that.
You are.
You know I can't resist. Okay. 3:30, ABC, Arkansas, on the road at Alabama. Another 19-point spread, Dan. Mm-hmm. Another battle between ranked teams, just like the game we just discussed. Bama has won the last 13 meetings, including a game last year in Fayetteville, by 49. They won 52-3.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dan, if you could take a knee for a second.
I want to ask you a bunch of questions. And I want to have them answered immediately.
Is there any look-ahead potential on the Alabama side here? They've got the Iron Bowl against Auburn on deck.
Right. Not with Bo Nix breaking his ankle and missing the rest of the year. And not with Auburn in the last couple weeks of Auburn threatening the division, it seems. So, no, I think technically Auburn's still in it for the West. Like, 11 things need to happen. But, no, I don't think the look ahead is quite there in the same way that maybe it was 3 or 4 weeks ago. Because Arkansas's a pretty good team.
Arkansas is a pretty good team. And didn't they lose 37-0 to Georgia?
They did.
Yeah.
Can confirm. Yeah.
I love what Arkansas has done this season. KJ Jefferson has been nothing short of a revelation. The rushing attack's been a joy to watch. If you count KJ, they've got 4 very dangerous runners. Clearly, that is the focal point of this offense. They've played off that run really well. That's why it's been a monster season for Treylon Burks. Dude's built like T.O. He's probably going to be a first-round pick. Got 15 yards a catch, 8 touchdowns. He's been a freak out there. So all due credit to Arkansas and Sam Pittman and what they've built. With all that said, Alabama has a great rushing defense, and I'm not at all confident that the Hogs and their passing attack are going to be able to make up the difference. I hope I'm wrong. Again, I root for underdogs because that's just what I do now. That's what most of our listening audience is doing at this point.
Sure.
I just don't see it. I don't see it for Arkansas. I don't see the win. I don't see the cover. I think it's something like 45-21 if they get to 21. I think it's a cover for Bama. I think Bama is trying to prove something. They know that they're number 2 in the polls. There's more to lose for Bama, and I think Nick Saban will drill that into their heads repeatedly over the course of the next few weeks. So give me Bama here. If you want to talk about the Underthink Express, let's go Crimson Tide.
Yeah, I'm going to go Tide here as well. And what Arkansas has carved out as a team identity, I suppose, a defensive identity. If you have quarterback issues, if you have inconsistent quarterback play, Arkansas is likely to beat you.
Yeah.
Right? You look at their schedule. Obviously, right. The Texas win hasn't aged especially well. But with the struggles of Zach Calzada on that neutral site field, Arkansas is able to pull it out. LSU, quarterback issues. Arkansas doesn't play particularly well, but they pull it out. They limit LSU. They make quarterbacks look silly. They're especially good on passing downs, right? Barry Odom and that defense has done a good job. They have done a good job of confusing quarterbacks and getting off the field. I don't see Alabama as a team that qualifies as a team that has quarterback issues.
No, not at all.
And passing game issues.
Not at all.
And so Alabama's been especially good on passing downs. When they are forced into second and long, third and long, fourth down, fourth and six or whatever, that I'm just not that concerned about Arkansas keeping pace here. And so Arkansas, still a good story, still a good team, but I think Alabama's an especially difficult matchup, to say the least. The game's in Tuscaloosa, correct?
Game is in Tuscaloosa, yeah.
Yeah, so again, we've talked about, like, if you're going to upset a team as a 2-3-4 touchdown dog, you have to have your act together. And Arkansas, especially situationally, whether it's red zone stuff, whatever, they're just not there to me. And so I have Alabama covering the spread, again, as the engineer on the Underthink Express. Yeah, Alabama 34-10, something okay. Like that.
Yeah, I could see it. And by the way, on the topic of Arkansas, if Arkansas finishes 8-4 with losses to Georgia, Alabama, Ole Miss, and Auburn, three of those four on the road, that's a hell of a season for Sam Pittman.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't care if they don't win the SEC. I don't care if they don't win the SEC West. I don't care if they're ranked at all. But again, compared to expectations preseason, eight wins with the kind of schedule that we had been looking at fearful of in the preseason, that's a hell of a story. That's a bravo story to Sam Pittman and what he's
building. And by the way, that is a baby's breath from nine, given that they lost 52-51 to Ole Miss. Yeah. So
incredible story.
Yeah. I don't think Arkansas fans, I don't think Hog fans are going to be particularly pissed about an 8-4 year.
No, nor should they be. Okay.
Yeah.
We agree. 3:30 ESPN. This is a biggin, Dan.
Hit me.
Ooh, this is a biggin. B-I-C-C-A. Thank you, Dan. SMU, the Mustangs on the road at Cincinnati. Cincinnati is favored by 12 points. Cincinnati, I'll have you know, has two really big games left on the schedule. The first is this week against SMU. It's at home. The other is against Houston, who they're going to play in the American Championship game, provided they win one of their final two, which they're going to do. Technically, only Houston has qualified and clinched their spot in that game. I would imagine that Cincinnati is not very far behind. I want to play a thought experiment game with you.
Let's.
But first off, I need to know where you stand with regard to this game. Where are you at here?
I think Cincinnati covers. I think Cincinnati can win this game by a couple touchdowns. I am looking at SMU. What was their score against Memphis? Lost 28-25. They lost by 7 to Houston in a bit of a shootout. SMU did.
Yep. That was a fun game.
SMU's front is pretty good. And Jerome Ford being beat up, hopefully he's back. I don't know his status at the time of recording. If I'm going to be a believer in Cincinnati, I think there might be a glory boy element to the Bearcats. Mm. And that's the reason to pick Cincinnati. That SMU is going to throw it a bunch. And the secondary for the Bearcats is opportunistic. And we saw it against Notre Dame. That I think they are going to view this as, you like to put it, their Super Bowl, right? This is their shining moment mid-year to make that statement that they belong.
De facto national championship.
De facto national championship. Their Super Bowl, their de facto national championship.
Yeah.
I think Cincinnati, even with recent evidence to the contrary, I think there's a reason this line is where it is. I'm not a big believer still in SMU. So okay. I'm going to go Cincy here. I'm going to go Cincy to maybe create a couple turnovers and to comfortably win this game and play to expectations for the first time in a bit. I understand. I am an evidence-based person with these kind of picks. I'm going with a little bit of faith. I'm going with a little bit of faith here that Cincinnati rises to this moment like they've done in recent years under Luke Fickle. On the, you know, there was game day games at times. It's a faith-based pick for me with Cincinnati here by a couple touchdowns.
I love that you made that pick.
Yeah.
I love you for who you are.
Thank you.
And I love that for one time this season, my plan actually worked because you walked into my trap.
I'm ready.
If you swapped out the name SMU for a team like Arkansas or a team like Kentucky or a team like Arizona State, would you still take Cincinnati minus 12? I'm not saying to win, but Cincinnati minus 12 against Arkansas or Kentucky or Arizona State.
Do those teams have like similarly based underlying numbers and records? I don't have it in front of me.
Yes, and that's why I'm saying this.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out, is this a branding thing? Is it a labeling thing? Or is it an actual football thing? Because in terms of efficiency numbers, at least some of the numbers that I've aggregated.
Sure.
And they're not my numbers. I get them from other people. But if you kind of, you know, take the composite, SMU's within a point of all those teams. It's a very, very good football team. It's a veteran football team. And so I wonder if the fact that it's SMU and not a bigger brand name, if that plays tricks on the mind here.
I hear you. I mean, I think a lot of, if we're going to talk about SMU specifically and how they differ from ASU and Arkansas, I don't know who else you mentioned. SMU has played Abilene Christian, North Texas, Louisiana Tech, USF, Navy, and Tulane. Now, I know that there's crossover with Cincinnati.
And that's fair. And that's a fair perspective here.
These are sub 90th ranked SP Plus teams. Yeah.
So here's the deal. Very good, very veteran football team. Vegas had their over-under at 6, which was always too low. We talked about it in our preseason. I was like, you got to hammer the over on SMU.
Right.
Especially after they hired Jim Levitt to improve the defense, which he definitely has.
Yeah, no, they've been very good against the run.
Some things to know. Their quarterback is Tanner Mordecai. We talked about him here and there. We'll talk a little bit more about him now. Oklahoma transfer. He's got 37 touchdown passes on the year. He's second only to our boy Bailey Zappi from Western Kentucky, who has more. But those numbers are better than Bryce Young, better than Kenny Pickett, better than Sam Hartman, CJ Stroud. Again, maybe not playing the same level of competition, but he's been very, very good this year. They also got a really big injury boost last week, I think, when their boy Ulysses Bentley IV came back from a sprained ankle for their game with UCF, and he had a pretty good game on the ground. Didn't quite get to 100 yards, I think got to 97, but a very talented running back. I am on SMU here, and I feel pretty good about it. If you told me the point spread was Cincinnati minus 7, I would consider it. If you told me it was 10, I would be leery, but I'd consider it. Anything over 10 is too much, in my view, especially for a team like the Mustangs that is playing well right now and is probably good enough to win this game outright, and they will be up for this game. I think this might be the best game of the day. I think Cincinnati wins it. I think it's something like 34-31. I would not be shocked by an upset, but I feel very, very good about SMU. Let's lock it up.
Oh, man.
Love it. Of the week.
One of a triumvirate of locks for me this week. Thank you. I feel very, very good about SMU's chances to go in there and compete in Nippert Stadium. I do also agree with you that there is a bit of a Glory Boys complex here for the Cincinnati Bearcats. Going on the road to Notre Dame, that's not a... Like, they were solid in that game.
They needed those two turnovers, and I just think they can get that. You know, Tanner Mordecai has thrown 10 picks this year. By the way, if you like SMU... The Mustangs 6-3 as road dogs under Sonny Dykes. Not great on the road overall against the spread, but as dogs specifically, they tend to come through. That's what, 67% winning 2/3 of the time?
Yep.
Not bad.
I am going all in on SMU there. I feel good about their chances to cover, not necessarily win, though I think they could.
I can't argue it. That's a big line.
It's a big number. Okay. Moving on to 7:30, your Oregon Ducks on the road at Utah.
Yeah.
Utah favored by 3. This is the ABC game. I think Herbie and Fowler doing this one, right?
I think it's Sean McDonough.
Sean McDonough.
I think that's the last I saw, because there was the piece that John Canzano wrote for the Oregonian about how the terrible cameras
they wrote
keep getting
article
pushed
on it.
All around the West Coast, and that Oregon would have a better crew this week as a playoff team to show their game in actual HD instead of the upconverted standard definition or whatever ESPN was passing off as.
That pissed a lot of people off at ESPN, didn't it?
I'm sure it did. But guess what? ESPN has been going to those remote broadcasts and those bare bones broadcasts for a couple years now, and people are actually seeing it and seeing what happens when you try to cut corners when everybody has giant, beautiful TVs and can tell that the pixels are gigantic random-ass ESPN broadcasts.
It looks like an 8-bit broadcast. Okay.
Yeah.
First off, I found this sound. Do you remember this sound?
Yes. I think I sent it to you, right?
What is that?
So I think there is a mascot that is the Gooey Ducks. It's spelled Geoducks.
It is, like Geostorm, the movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's spelled Geoducks. They're these giant oyster-looking mollusks that are found in the Pacific Northwest. And I think when we were talking about weird, tiny schools, is it the University of Puget Sound? It's something in the Northwest that's the Fightin' Gooey Ducks.
Man.
And then I found that song.
I found that. I was going through the soundboard. I was like, why do we use this in the first place? But it has no context here. I just thought it was duck-related, and we're talking
Evergreen
about
State.
Evergreen State.
They're the Gooey Ducks, and their mascot is Speedy, the Gooey Duck. And I want to say Evergreen State is where Matt Groening, creator of The Simpsons, went to school, and of course, The Simpsons live on Evergreen Terrace.
With that being said,
sorry.
No, it's good. We have a good matchup
and
here.
And Springfield, Oregon being the basis for Springfield on The Simpsons. Yeah.
We have a good matchup here. Yeah. This is a potential preview of a Pac-12 championship game next month. Oregon's won the last 5, Utah the last 3. Both teams feature prolific rushing attacks and quarterbacks who can move. My gut is to take Oregon plus the points because of your glory boys theory as it relates to this team under Mario Cristobal, which you're going to explain here. I'm going to make you re-explain that. But your theory from 30,000 feet up is that Oregon gets up for big games. Oregon under Mario Cristobal likes to play the gorilla ball, where they're not afraid to run it if they are eating well on the ground.
Just mashing,
And also that they cover in big games away from Autzen Stadium. I don't really have a lean here. I don't know Oregon as well as you do. It seems as if you've got the finger pretty well on the pulse of this Ducks team. It feels like a very even matchup. Like if you look at the efficiency numbers here, it's dead even.
Yeah.
Talk me through your logic here, and I'm going to side with you. My gut is Oregon plus the 3, but I am ultimately going to take whatever you tell me to take.
Yeah, Mario Cristobal in Oregon since 2018, winning records both on the road against the spread and on the road as road dogs. So trend-wise, it favors Oregon slightly. You're right. This is an even matchup. It's at altitude, if you have that sound at the ready, which I never love. But do you have it at the ready?
I don't have it.
Come on.
No, I can't. It's the one sound I don't have.
That's my approximation. So I like Oregon here. I like Oregon here because Utah is a very good team that I believe the Ducks can exploit on the ground more so than Utah. I know Tavion Thomas, their star running back, is beat up. He didn't play last week against Arizona. That was a bit of a close call. That was back and forth. I do like the Cats of Arizona fine. But I think Oregon should be able to, over the course of 4 quarters, control this game. Now, the big asterisk is Anthony Brown. And coming up big on third downs and not making mistakes that end up with turnovers. I get all of that, right? They have the slowdown against Washington State, the slow start against Washington State, and giving up that big play that ultimately didn't matter. But if Oregon's able to start relatively well, I think Oregon is one of those teams that in the second half, if it's close or they have a lead, they're terribly difficult to beat. Because of that rushing attack, we've seen the emergence of Byron Cardwell, their third string running back. The freshman has played quite well after CJ Verdell went down. I know they're beat up at receiver. I don't think it's going to matter because we're seeing an evolution of this Oregon offense, especially with Anthony Brown running the ball like he did against Washington State. I think we're going to see more of that. And there is something that is a little bit more concerning. If I'm looking at this Utah team, To beat Oregon, you need some explosive plays, and they're just not a downfield passing team. Cam Rising's good, but I just don't think they have the weapons out wide. Britton Covey may be 44 years old, and he's still at Utah. I don't know. Like, I just don't have those guys that put the fear of life into me out wide. And a lot of the evidence points to Utah. that they're playing at home. They play especially well at home. Yeah. They've gotten better under Cam Rising. They've been running the ball really well. Oregon actually does a good job stopping the run. But I'm going with talent here. I'm going with talent. We saw it recently a couple years ago, and that was a Justin Herbert team just blowing out Utah in the Pac-12 championship game. These teams look like they're going to be playing each other twice. A side note here, if Utah wins this game, they take themselves out of Rose Bowl contention. I like Oregon here by a touchdown. I do.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to side with you here. I feel like you've had a good sense for Oregon all year. You haven't really done me wrong on that front at all. So let's go Oregon. I agree.
I get like 6:08 a.m. texts from Jeff saying like, I'm looking for how Utah can beat Oregon, and I can't find it. Okay. And he watches the huddle tape. He looks at the underlying numbers and the specific matchups, and he's leaning that way as well. So I trust him too there.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
8 p.m. Let's talk about Oklahoma State. Let's talk about Texas Tech. Oklahoma State's favored by 10.5 here. They have been undervalued by Vegas all year. About covering percentages and whatnot. Oklahoma State's covered 80% of the time this year. So Vegas doesn't have a good sense for the Pokes. Meanwhile, Tech fired Matt Wells a couple weeks ago amid a murderer's row here of games to close out the season. Oklahoma, Iowa State, Oklahoma State this week, and then Baylor next week to close out the year. Incredible.
Yep.
Still, though, Tech is playing hard. They beat Iowa State on a 62-yard field goal last week, which is still mind-blowing to me that that's even a thing in college. Fans storm the field. I'll be honest with you, Dan. I don't like betting on a team after their fans storm the field. Is it just me?
No, I'm right there with you.
Is there any greater letdown for a college kid? 1 week after the fans storm the field, you're on top of the world, king of the castle, and now you got to play a different game, like against a really good defense that's probably going to bore you to death, but is going to stop most of your plays because you're so damn good. I don't like that setup. I also don't like the setup a week before a hated rivalry game, the Bedlam game, on deck for Oklahoma State.
Agreed.
I've got competing theories here, none of which is based on actual fact.
Okay.
Or any empirical data.
Right.
It is a question of, do we go with the team that is in a potential look-ahead spot in Oklahoma State, minus 10 on the road in Lubbock, or do we go against a team dealing with a letdown? It is sort of a letdown look-ahead sandwich if you combine two different pieces of bread.
Mm-hmm.
I think I go Oklahoma State, and I think I go Oklahoma State 31-17. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, So Texas Tech quietly has, even with moving on from Matt Wells, they've mounted one of the more impressive offenses, considering how beat up they are at quarterback, right? They've been able to score points. They've been able to come through, beating Iowa State like they did. Crazy impressive with Donovan. Sorry, my voice is going. I am taking Oklahoma State here.
Yeah.
Because, again, I'm going to underthink it here. And I think defense travels. And Oklahoma State, while there is that look-ahead element, now Oklahoma loses, and they're clearly more vulnerable than usual. Oklahoma State, who has had so little success, if at all, against OU over the years, sees blood in the water.
I
could see that being a distraction. But again, I don't know. Defense is about effort. It's about aggression. And whatever offensive hiccups that Oklahoma State has had this year, they're still scoring points. It's not like the offense is a liability. I'd love for Spencer Sanders to make fewer mistakes, definitely. But this year's Oklahoma State team is one that just gets the job done.
Yeah.
And I think we undervalue that. And Vegas obviously undervalues that because they can't put these poke lines high enough. I think they're just the clearly and demonstrative better team. And so I'm rolling with that. I'm rolling with the Pokes here to win this by a couple touchdowns, because even though Texas Tech has very clearly been better at home, right? They nearly beat Kansas State a couple weeks ago. They just got destroyed by TCU. I hear you. But I'm just a believer. The best thing in this game is so very clearly the Oklahoma State defense, and how many points do you need to cover 10.5 if you're holding a team to 7 to 10 points. Yeah, not that many.
And that's the thing. I mean, I don't know if they're going to hold Texas Tech to 7 to 10 points.
Sure.
Tech will probably score a little bit more than that, but the defense has not taken any weeks off for Oklahoma State. Now, they lost a game to Iowa State. That was a close game.
Yep.
But like, the defense has been one of the steadier units in college football. I hate to put it in the same breath as Georgia, because Georgia's been so just on a different level than every other defense in college football. But the consistency of this Oklahoma State Cowboys defense has been there. They've been really good all year. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not going to turn my back on them now. Not on the road. I mean, this is a defense that traveled up to Boise State and played a hell of a second half. Without the defense, they don't win that game.
Right.
This is a defense that has gone on the road to Texas. This is a defense that, you know, kept West Virginia to 3 points in Morgantown, which is not always the easiest thing to do.
Correct. Held Baylor to 14.
Can they travel to Lubbock? Yeah, they could travel to Lubbock. 31-17. Give me the Pokes. We agree.
I have it probably 27-13.
All right. Some quick hitters, Dan. You ready to go rapid fire?
I'm ready.
12 p.m. Fox, Iowa State on the road at Oklahoma. Oklahoma favored by 4. I also found this sound. It fits pretty well with Iowa State.
You have given me nothing but empty promises.
A little Krang there.
I'm almost positive I found that, because I love Krang.
You definitely found that. I am taking Iowa State straight up. Lock of the week.
Lock of the week.
Season has been a huge disappointment for the Clones. Nobody expected 4 losses at this point. You sort of stole my thunder, Dan. Thank you, Stu.
Yeah.
I have come to fear the de facto national championship game in all contexts in college football.
Yeah.
And Iowa State's been mistake prone. And as we talked about last night on the Slack, yeah, they do kind of stink.
Mm-hmm.
But
want to fire their offensive coordinator. Yeah.
I still contend that this is a dangerous team. And Oklahoma may be licking its wounds a week after suffering its first loss. So I am on the Clones +4 and outright as my second of 3 locks this week.
So I like Iowa State in that I like John Haycock and his ability to confuse especially greener quarterbacks with that defense. That has been a successful element of Iowa State these past few years. I kind of think the Iowa State offense is broken to a certain extent. I also kind of think Oklahoma might now be underrated a little bit. Like, Baylor's good. There's no shame in losing to Baylor on the road like Oklahoma did. Now, the manner in which they played was very disappointing, right? They abandoned the run. They rely on Caleb Williams too much. He gets confused. There's a couple of bad picks. I get all of that. I'm with you. But I now think OU's a little bit underrated. They were still undefeated Clunkers, for sure. But they won those games. Where Iowa State's not necessarily winning their clunkers. Iowa State finds multiple ways to lose these games. Big kicks, go on the road to West Virginia, special teams. Like they're all over the place. I'm going to go with Oklahoma to, at home, where Caleb Williams has definitely been better, bounce back in a big way.
Okay.
I still think Oklahoma is a good but not great team, whereas I think Iowa State is too flawed all over the place. If you're losing to Texas Tech and West Virginia, what are you really? Okay. What are you really?
Fair enough. Let's move on. 12 o'clock ESPN. Wake Forest at Clemson. Clemson is a 4.5-point favorite. I guess the question here is, to what end can Clemson and its defense slow down Wake? For me, it's one of the more fascinating questions of the entire week of college football. I am going to take Clemson. I think they're playing better. I still think they've got the defense, offensive work in progress, but DJU has improved, and I'm not ready to give Wake the victory here. I'm not ready for Wake to cover here against Clemson. I still think Clemson's got a fair amount in the tank, if only on defense.
The worst thing in this game is the Wake Forest defense, and this is going to be the best defense Clemson play or Wake Forest plays all year. I like Clemson here. I like Clemson almost comfortably. And I like Wake. I think Wake's been a terrific story and super fun to watch. But if Wake's not able to consistently do Wake things and they merely score, like how many points do you need to score now? Because every team has been scoring 40 to 50 points against Wake. It's just not a sustainable way to beat a decent team, which I think Clemson is. So I'm going Clemson here to win this game 31-24.
We agree. 12 o'clock. ACC Network, Florida State at Boston College. Boston College favored by 2.5. Boston College, my third and final lock of the week.
Lock of the week.
Giving you three dragons this week, Dan. Florida State riding high after the comeback against their hated rival Miami. Mike Norvell, man, we talk about Sam Pittman and the job he's done. Mm-hmm. Mike Norvell putting this thing back on the tracks after an 0-4 start should not be overlooked. That has really been an admirable job that he has done. Their issue, though, is that they've got to win out to make a bowl game. And they've got Boston College this week. I think they close out with Florida. Those are two winnable games, I think, by any measure, especially with where Florida's at right now. Who knows where Florida's at right now? I do think there is serious letdown potential here, though. And I also think that this is a totally different Boston College team after the return of Phil Jurkovec. And I don't know if that's been factored into this point spread.
I hear you. And I like Boston College too here. I'm taking the Eagles. The only thing that does concern me is a very specific matchup of Boston College can't stop anybody on the ground. And Florida State runs the hell out of the ball, especially when Jordan Travis is back there. So that is concerning to me, that even Florida State not playing well can rip off three big runs and that'll win the game. I'm going BC here just because of the emotional swing of beating Miami the way that they did. Going to play a healthier, more impressive Boston College team. Give me BC here.
2:30 NBC, Georgia Tech at Notre Dame. Notre Dame favored by, I don't even know how much they're favored by at this point. I had 16. I think it's probably close to 17, 17.5 now. Tech is 3-7 on the year. They've lost their last four against Virginia Tech, Miami, and BC. It is not a situation where they're getting blown out, though.
Right.
And I think if I were forced to pick, I would probably take the points here.
Why is that?
Notre Dame wins comfortably. Notre Dame wins by 17, but that's right around that number. I'm not confident enough to place any real American dollars on this. I think it's a game where Tech could find ways to score and hang around, even if Notre Dame's got them at arm's length. This feels like a backdoor cover kind of game to me. So Notre Dame wins comfortably. Notre Dame continues on its trajectory. Who knows what happens with Kyle Hamilton moving forward? I saw that per our friend Pete Sampson at The Athletic, Brian Kelly basically acknowledged that Hamilton's out for the rest of the year. Whether that includes any postseason remains to be seen.
Right.
But, that's kind of a separate issue altogether. Notre Dame wins. I just don't know if they cover.
Georgia Tech has been weirdly very impressive on the road this year.
Yeah.
And Notre Dame is covered at home. They've won 4 out of 5 as a home favorite this year, or covered as 4 out of 5 times. Georgia Tech is interesting because they can run the hell out of the ball. They've got two backs there. I don't see a way over the course of a game. Man, what did you say it's at right now?
It's like 17 points. That's a lot.
I think I'm inclined to take Georgia Tech here.
Yeah, that's a lot of points. That's just
this has a good deal of backdoor cover and Notre Dame not playing its starters up 21 in the fourth quarter. And
oh, they're going to play starters. They're going to try and run it up as best they can. But
sure. Okay.
Tech hasn't really gotten blown out.
No, and they've been competitive on the road. We saw the game against Clemson. It was, 14-8 in a kind of a storm. But they beat Duke on the road, which, whatever, it's Duke. But also on the road, we're talking about a one-possession loss to Virginia. We're talking about a three-point loss at Miami. And I think that's it. But still, they've come to play. They play up to these opponents. I'm going to take those points.
3:30 ABC, Nebraska at Wisconsin. Wisconsin favored by 9.5. The line has gone down. Originally, Wisconsin was favored by a little bit more. I do think that this is a different Wisconsin team than the one that started 1-3. They have gotten better. They've won 6 in a row. Defense has not given up more than 14 points since October, first week of October. I think this is something like 28-17. I think it's right around that number. But yeah. I do trust that Wisconsin defense more than I trust anything else on the field.
Yeah, I'm just, when I look at the quarterbacks, Wisconsin, I mean, it's Aiden O'Connell and who, right? In that 6-game win streak, it's Illinois, Army, Iowa, Rutgers. Like, they've taken care of business as a good team should. Nebraska, though, to me, there is a take your pick of Mike Tyson's punch out opponents quality to everybody gets Nebraska, struggles with Nebraska. It's relatively close. They beat Nebraska. They're the Soda Popinski, the Bald Bull, the Don Flamenco, whoever it is, King Hippo, right? Well, maybe King Hippo is the most apt because there's a very specific way of beating Nebraska, and that's just get them in a close game and you beat them, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to take the points here. I think Nebraska fights valiantly. They lose by 5 or 6.
3:30, Big Ten Network, Michigan -14.5 on the road at Maryland. I played the trap sound on the recap show. I'll play this one now.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that sandwich. I'm so hungry. I'm so hungry.
Oh, boy.
We both thought Michigan looked damn impressive last week against Penn State. I am elated to watch them play Ohio State in a week and a half, I guess, at time of recording.
Yep.
Because it is an incredible rivalry. I do worry that the Wolverines also share in my elation and my anticipation, and that perhaps they may be looking ahead here. Meanwhile, the Terps can get to a bowl by beating Michigan or by beating Rutgers.
Yeah.
Next week. To be honest, that does frighten me.
Mm-hmm.
They're just far too mistake prone, and I'm not convinced Maryland does not stink. Just a little
right.
bit.
Yeah.
The only reason you take the points here, the only reason you have any faith in Maryland, is because you're concerned about that look ahead factor on the Michigan side. Generally speaking, if that's your only reason, that's not a good enough reason for me.
Yeah.
They're going to have a real challenge here stopping the Michigan ground game in whatever version that takes on here. I want to take the points. I can't take the points. My heart of heart tells me that Maryland really stinks. They may beat Rutgers. They may go to a bowl game, but they're not good enough to contend in a game like this. And they haven't done anything impressive all year against a good team. So situationally, it's weird for Michigan, but I'm laying the number. Give me Michigan.
I think Michigan's going to win this game by a bajillion points. Lock of the week. Play the sound.
Lock of the week.
We need to talk about how good Maryland is at losing. They are an elite loser, Ty. They lose 51-14, 66-17, 34-16 to a Minnesota team who basically otherwise hasn't found offense. 31-14 to Penn State, 40-21 to Michigan State. They're not losing at the gun, Ty. They're not losing after it being tied at halftime and just fading in the second half. They are an elite, elite loser. And that's who Michigan, traditionally, under Jim Harbaugh, he's happy to run it, take advantage of turnovers, which, by the way, Maryland loves turning the ball over as an elite loser. These are teams that Michigan is built to beat 45-11. So, yeah, Michigan's going to destroy Maryland. because that's what Maryland serves up to teams. Confidence, right?
Yeah.
Statistics. That's what Maryland does. And so I just don't see a way. And you're right that it's a look-ahead spot, and you're right that Maryland could get bowl eligible because of their kind of ghastly opening four games. No, Michigan. By the way, a lot of Jody's friends are Michigan people because that's where she went to, and Maryland people, and they had a friend merge group.
They had a merge group.
They call their friend group the Merge.
The Merge.
It's a bunch of Terps and Wolverines. So okay. I always think of that when this matchup happens because there's not that much more to think about.
Moving on, 4 o'clock. Let's go to Louisiana against Liberty.
Yeah.
Liberty favored by 4. I'm on Louisiana here.
Yep.
Like you said on the recap show, everyone just sort of forgot about Louisiana after that Texas game. So Louisiana plus the points for me.
Yeah, Louisiana has done a fantastic job since that Texas game. And this is defense travels. And
yeah, okay.
Even though Malik Willis should be able to get his, I just think they're going to make too many plays on defense.
UAB versus UTSA. UTSA favored by 4.5. UTSA a cool 80% against the spread this year. They are at home. Last week was a little bit of a slip up. They did have to come back against Southern Miss. Southern Miss is not very good. No. But I do think the Roadrunners, please play the sound if you have it.
Meep, meep.
Thank you, Dan. I think the Roadrunners are up for this one. They cover 4.5.
This is another example of defense traveling. It's also very difficult to go undefeated. And is this UTSA's last slip up potential of the season?
So. Yeah, it is.
This worries me. This one, I'm not going to lie, Ty. I think I'm going UAB.
Wow.
I'm going Blazers.
UAB.
Yeah.
All right, fine.
I like their ability to generate bigger plays, and it's tough to go undefeated. It's tough to go from being pretty decent and promising to 12-0. I'm going UAB to be that team.
You just need to be like James Franklin, have that 1-0 mentality, Dan. That's what does it.
I guess so. But I think Dwayne McBride, right, for UAB?
Yeah. All right.
He's good.
4 o'clock.
I watched a little bit of him.
On Fox, UCLA -3 against USC. Can you give me that Tracy Chapman? Can you give me that one good reason to
give
take
me
the USC
reason
Trojans?
To stay. Yeah.
What is that reason to take the Trojans in this game?
Don't have it. Yeah. I mean, it's a rivalry game, and the uniform matchup is incredible because they both wear their home, like the reds and the baby blues. That's a good reason. It's always good to be a USC Trojan and beat UCLA. That always has to feel good and be motivating. But USC's current head coach is Dante Williams, and all he does is lose. So that's not true. He's won a couple. I'm going UCLA here. I'm going UCLA to win this one comfortably. That is actually double lock of the week. How about that?
Lock of the week.
You have 3 current locks?
I went triple barrel. You have double barrel right now.
Oh, my God. It's like we are entering a bagel shop, Ty.
Yeah.
Lots of locks. Continue.
We agree. All right. Very quickly, let's get through the last 4. Interesting point spread here. Very interesting. That's as high as I can go. 5:30, FS1, Baylor -1. On the road at K-State. Originally, K-State was favored by 1. The line has shifted to the Baylor side, but still, point spread lurking very conspicuously at just 1 point, Dan. Baylor also falls into that category of having its student body rush the field not once, but twice.
True.
To Lincoln Riley's chagrin last week in the upset victory over the Oklahoma Sooners, Dan. We got.
I'm going K-State here. They've looked good of late. They've looked good as of late. They've won games. They run the hell out of the ball. They've got a good quarterback. The receivers have developed nicely this year for K-State. And you're right. It's a letdown spot on the road at night-ish because it's about a 5:30 kick, but it's not in the Eastern time. So it's going to be nighttime in Manhattan. I just think it's difficult. It's a difficult spot situationally for Baylor. I think Kansas State comes through. They do enough well that I'm just going to go with the home team against a team in a letdown spot.
I'm going to go Baylor. I'm walking into a trap, and I know it.
It's super trappy.
I'm going against the theory that I just made up earlier in the show. That's how you can tell it's the real one. But
K-State's been good up front. I worry that Baylor has to win this on the arm of Gary Bohannon. That scares me a little bit on the road in the Little Apple.
I'm going to go Baylor. Heaven help me. I may be walking into a trap. 7 p.m. ESPN, Auburn -7.5 on the road at South Carolina. Bo Nix out the rest of the year. Got hurt last week, hurt the ankle.
Sucks to say.
Had surgery, so he's done, which is a bummer for them. Auburn's still favored by, obviously, a little bit over a touchdown. TJ Finley, I believe, getting the start for the Auburn Tigers. South Carolina, I think, a win away from bowl eligibility. So, what say you, Dan?
Auburn's still just going to... Shout out Phoenix, shout out France. I'm going with Auburn here. I still think they are going to be amped up for this game. It's on the road. I just don't think South Carolina is especially good.
No,
they're
and not. They're
under Think Express, Auburn should still be able to move the ball, should still be able to get stops. South Carolina eventually will become competitive. I don't think they are in this spot.
I agree. Moving on. 7:30 ACC Network. Virginia Tech now without Justin Fuente. On the road at Miami. Miami favored by 7. I do think Miami's the better team. My problem is they've got this glaring propensity, Dan, to play every game close.
That's
true. And also, you mentioned something last week that's 100% true. They may not be that well coached. Miami also recently fired its AD.
True.
Just like a day prior to us hitting the record button, there is some open question around the status of Manny Diaz moving forward, if at all his fate was tied to that of the athletic director. So a lot of administrative occult forces at play here. Don't know how any of them are going to factor in. Miami -7. What say you?
I'm going Miami here. And I'm going Miami because I think they're going to be able to run the ball pretty well against Virginia Tech. And I understand that they've been playing games close. I understand that there is sometimes a bounce back theory after your head coach is let go and this kind of a refresh situation. I don't think Virginia Tech has the quarterback. I don't think they have the offense to score 20 points, 24 points, 28 points, whatever, which is what I think it'll take to cover against Miami, because I don't think they have the defense. Virginia Tech does. So, I'm going Miami here to win by, I don't know, 10, 13 points.
We agree. We agree again.
Yep.
And finally, 10:30 ESPN2. Arizona State -3 on the road in Corvallis against the Oregon State Beavers. I hate taking the road favorite in Pac-12 after dark. I even hate it more that it's ASU because I just don't feel like I can trust them. But does feel like a teeny bit of a mismatch here, because as opposed to some of the other programs that we have called out that get cute and overthink it, Arizona State could well be that true conductor of the Underthink Express, because they're very good at KFG. Keep effing running. They're KFR, very good at doing that. Yeah, what'd you say? KFR.
You said KFG, yeah.
I'm getting my numbers, my acronyms, letters mixed up, whatever. They're very good at KFR. They're very good at keep effing running. And I think they can do that here against Arizona State. It's the one thing ASU is very good at, with Rashad White, with even Jaden Daniels. So,
yeah.
For as much as I hate it, I'm going to lay the number with ASU.
Taking a road favorite, Pac-12 after dark.
I hate it.
Second straight road game. Daniels hasn't been especially good on the road.
I hate it.
No, I'm going Oregon State here. Oregon State here. I'll happily take the Beavs in this spot. You're right. Their run defense is not good. Rashad White has been fantastic for ASU. No, it's too much situationally. Give me Oregon State.
That is all I have, Dan. We've covered a lot of ground here.
True.
In week 12.
Should mention, by the way, it's Cal Stanford. Big game.
Yep.
Big game week. Not as big a game this year with the depths to which both of these teams have fallen, but it's still a big game because it's the big game. Kansas at TCU. I just think it's interesting, man.
Yeah,
Kansas is competing. It's a letdown spot for the Jayhawks, for Rock Chalk, but TCU is not that good. And Kansas, even when TCU's good, Kansas gives them trouble. It's like 9 coaches ago, whatever. But Illinois, Iowa. I saw Bert Bielema.
Yep.
COVID out of this one. Breakthrough case. I hope he's all right. I hope the symptoms are not especially pronounced. Illinois has been playing good football of late. This game could be quite ugly. I'm just telling you that it's happening. Texas at West Virginia. I don't know what to expect from this. What'd you say? Bijan Robinson out for the year?
Bijan Robinson, dislocated elbow out for the year.
That sucks. Hope he heals up. because he's been a real bright spot for a Texas team that Steve Sarkisian described as unsure if they've tuned him out, I think was
yeah,
the quote,
I was
going
to say, you know, I mean, not to question anyone's injury. I'm sure Bijan Robinson's hurt. I'm not
oh, of course
saying
he
he's a faker. But
he's a competitor.
But like, if maybe he just hurt his arm, I don't know, with the mouse on his computer, like wrenching it at... Like, you would kind of understand at this point, because it feels
he's
like...
He's flopping? Is that what you're implying? That there's a 1% chance, at least, that he's flopping because he doesn't like Sark?
There's at least a 1% chance, yeah.
Wow.
And that is not at all paying disrespect to Bijan Robinson. If anything, it's a compliment with the way that this Texas season has gone.
Man, yeah, Texas, West Virginia used to be... I mean, do you remember when the Will Grier game happened? Like, it was such a headline, like, heavyweight battle and... God, has it fallen off just considerably? Also, Purdue Northwestern is playing at Wrigley.
Yeah, don't steal my thunder. Don't steal my thunder.
Sorry, you asked me if anything else.
Don't
steal
my thunder, Stu. Don't do it.
So do you have like a nickname for Purdue Northwestern?
We will get to that game. We'll get to that game. It's our final segment of the day.
Okay, no, I do want to say this because I like honoring these teams and steering clear of the playoff as often as we possibly can, because there are a number of teams that are at five games. And with a win this weekend, they are to bowl eligibility. If they're able to come through, they're not close. They're there. Toledo, Miami of Ohio, Ball State, Louisville, Memphis, Wazoo, Florida Atlantic, North Carolina, Rutgers, Kent State, Georgia State, Maryland, Charlotte, Middle Tennessee, Troy, Syracuse, Florida. That's weird. And they're playing against Mizzou. And they're both trying. Mizzou's at five wins as well. South Carolina, South Alabama, and Tennessee. Jaguars are playing the Vols, so they're both... with a win, one of those teams is bowl eligible. Virginia Tech, Miami playing each other as well, and Wyoming, who started out kind of well and then have been pretty terrible in Mountain West play, mm-hmm. So at least trying to get to a bowl game.
Since you're not going to say it, can you play that big, pulsating, stanky, throbbing...
What happened to Purdue Northwestern? I was waiting for
Drummond,
your...
It's at the end of the show. Drummond Fife!
Oh, it's amazing.
You snooze, you lose, dude. That's the way this thing works.
True. I cannot wait for this preview.
12 o'clock ESPN Plus, Georgetown at Morgan State. Dan, last week of Patriot League action. Who you got?
I guess Georgetown? They've been disappointing away from multi-sport field, but I'm rolling with them anyway.
We got to go Georgetown. One last ride, man. One last
job.
12 o'clock, Fordham at Colgate. Dan, going Gators, you going Fordham?
Fordham huge. Fordham absolutely huge.
Give me the Gators. They're at home. 12 o'clock. Lehigh at... No. Lafayette at Lehigh. I screwed it up.
Big game.
Big, big game. Huge rivalry. I'm going Lafayette, man. You know my stance on Lehigh this year. They're dead to me.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Are you closer to Lehigh or Lafayette geographically now?
I'm closer to Lehigh, yeah.
I'm going Lafayette as well. I have to. Come on. I'm a legacy. I'm going Lafayette. I'm going them real big. Going them. Yeah, of course. Papa Rubenstein.
Yeah.
Lafayette alum. A leopard. A proud leopard. And I've been told secondary market Tokyo Dome seats going for crazy prices.
It's like $100 to get into this game.
It's unbelievable.
Not
it's
kidding.
Great.
Two bad teams, but a big rivalry.
Yeah, of course.
Finally, 1 o'clock. Bring the music down here. The revered Holy Cross Crusaders on the road at Bucknell. The Bison, the Nellies.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're both in unison here going to go with the Crusaders, right?
Definitely going Crusaders here. Huge.
Final week of Patriot League games, Dan.
Man, what a ride.
But not the final segment on this show.
Oh, finally.
It's time for the Big Ten Bet of the Week, presented by our friends over at DraftKings, Dan.
I love this.
Purdue minus 11 on the road at Northwestern. The game is in Wrigley Field. Are you going to this game? You should go to this game.
I love Wrigley. I've been to Wrigley. I've been to a concert at Wrigley. I've been to Cubs games at Wrigley. Alas, I will be watching other games during this game.
Come on, man. So, take the little men over to Wrigley.
If I had to... Again, this is the DraftKings wagering segment as well, right? So if I had to wager on how long I could last at a college football game with a 2.5-year-old before he demanded to leave or do something else.
Over under 10.5 minutes.
If I could get a series out of both of these schools, I would be shocked. I would be shocked. I would have to ply him with so many ice cream cones and popcorn containers. Like it would not work. So no, I could not make that happen this year.
We have barely talked about Northwestern this season.
True.
And that's partially because their old defensive coordinator, Mike Hankwitz, retired after the season. Jim O'Neill came over from the NFL, and they have not been very good. To be fair, they've also been very bad on offense, too.
Yeah.
I've got Purdue winning and covering in this road game in historic Wrigley Field. I think Purdue wins by a 31-14 final, Dan.
Yeah, I think Purdue could. What's the line again?
DraftKings right now has it at Purdue minus 11 at time of recording.
Purdue minus 11 at time of recording. Can I get an over-under on how much money both... Pat Fitzgerald and David Shaw are going to make this year for the results that they're getting from these elite academic institutions. They're making $10+ million total. They're making $15+ million. Like, it's something wild. So yeah, it's been a down year for Northwestern. I would be happy to wager money against them. By the way, Northwestern against the spread this year. Do you know what they are?
They're like 2-8, aren't they?
Northwestern's 3-7.
Yeah.
So
brutal.
You made a lot of money betting against teams like Northwestern and Clemson, New Mexico, Kansas, Mizzou. But yeah, Northwestern's right there at 3-7. You're happy to make some cash.
Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the promo code SOLID. You bet $1 on either team in this game to score, and you will win $100 in free bets.
Whoa.
So if they score, you score. The promo code you need to use is SOLID. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. It is the official sports betting partner of the NFL. Got to be 21 or older in New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania. Only for new customers with a minimum deposit of $5. Again, that $1 wager is required. One per customer allowed. Restrictions apply. Go to DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. The only thing I need to add in addition to that is that if you are out and about, if you're making your own window of opportunity, do visit with our friend Stephen Hartzell, Stevie Speedrun, over at the College Football Blitz. It is the Red Zone channel for college football. It starts at noon on ESPNU Radio, Sirius XM Channel 84, and the Varsity Network app. Live whip-around coverage of every game in the top 25. You can hear the scoring as it happens, as called by each school's hometown radio crew. You get just 3 commercial breaks per hour, which means 56 minutes of live play-by-play coverage, Daniel.
The best. The absolute best.
Week 12 is upon us. We've got one more big week of the regular season next week. We, of course, will be here with you all throughout. We would encourage you, though, please watch college football. Please enjoy it in all its glory. Please call our Reverb line at 408 Verbal 1, that is 408-837-2251. We will mix those together into our Reverbs segment that we'll play as part of the Week 12 recap show. Go on out to SolidSaturday.com and be part of the live stream, which takes place every Saturday on our YouTube channel at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. SolidGiveaway.com is how you can enter to win that RG3 signed mini helmet. Don't forget to subscribe via Apple Podcasts and leave a rating or review. All that stuff really does help us. And last but certainly not least, Verballers.com. Still got folks subscribing on a regular basis, becoming new certified and premium Verballers. Get access to this show, all of our shows a little bit early. You can also be part of the Discord community and get some other perks. We do an extra episode that drops every Thursday. That is our Q&A show that we have retained, but only on an exclusive basis, Dan. I think that's all I got.
Yeah, especially if your team has a huge win and you want to hear that Sunday morning show as early as humanly possible, get in on that. Verballers.com. It's going to be resting there right for you early afternoon Eastern time. So I love it. I love doing those early shows with you. I love doing the Bruin A. The Bruin A, we get to weird places. Not that we're already not at a weird place with
P-I-C-C-A. Pizza.
Pizza. Hey, are you ready to play?
Let it play out, dude. Let it play out.
Let it play. I'm actually going to start making a lot of pizza. I'm working on some new recipes and doing a lot of experimenting. So I'll post some not so sad slices in the coming days. How about that?
For that guy over there, the pizza chef in the heart of the Midwest, Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrand, over here on the East Coast in Eastern Pennsylvania. Thank you so much for downloading, for listening, for supporting, for playing along with our madness. We'll be back on Friday talking more college football. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.